Totally Football Show, bumper edition, probably. England, we ask, are Man City run by the Home Office? Costly European exit, tick. Tearing up records, tick. Sending visitors home unhappy, tickaroo. With them now champions anyway, there is sweet FA left to play for, literally, this weekend, as the Cup takes centre stage. Man United against Spurs, Chelsea and Southampton at Wembley. Abroad, Serie A title race roars back to life like that woman in the bath in Les Diaboliques. 4 points now between Napoli and Juventus, and they meet on Sunday. We'll talk about that. Best 11s of non-Big Six sides. We say, take a bow, the brow, salute the Bundesliga's latest innovation, and more in this Totally Football Show. Oi, oi, listeners. Thanks for joining us on an especially sunny Thursday morning in central London, Jazz FM, home of the Totally Football Show. With us here, Bath Times' David Preece.
Good morning, James.
You're looking all fluffy and freshly scrubbed.
Am I?
Oh. Yeah.
Listeners should know he's fully dressed.
Yes.
Yeah.
Ben was trying to get me in my Speedos today, but I resisted.
Yeah. Always resist, David. Always resist. We've got a rare appearance from James Horncastle, who you just heard.
How do?
Also here, Tom Williams, author of Do You Speak Football? A glossary of football words and phrases from around the world, which is published. Tom, when?
Hello, James. May the 3rd.
May the 3rd.
Soon. Imminent.
Wow. All right. Last time you were in, you gave some really choice bits of footballing, kind of the global football lexicon.
I did, yes.
I wonder if you'll treat us again later.
Perhaps I will.
What country might we be visiting?
We might be visiting India later on, yes. Appropriately in these sultry temperatures.
Brilliant. OK. Ooh, also on board, Scott Ealy. Come on, Scott. Scott says, I've not listened to any of this week's podcast yet because I'm saving them for a marathon on Sunday. By the time I get to today's, I will have hit a couple of walls. So if you have any inspirational messages or simply James telling me that I have this in that calming tone, that would be great. James?
Oh, does he mean me?
I believe he does.
You've got this.
More.
You've got this.
Believe in him.
Yeah. Is it just a podcast marathon where he's going to listen to lots of podcasts, or is it a genuine marathon?
Either way, it sounds grueling.
But good luck.
Yeah. FA Cup semi-finals, David Preece. Man United taking on Spurs. Woohoo! Both teams were in action this midweek, and I think it's fair to say that Man United looked the better of the two.
Well, there was a lot of change in Man United game last night. Difficult to see who's going to be playing on Saturday. There was no real... I know he said that it didn't have anything to do with resting players for Saturday, and it was all on performances. And I don't actually believe a word that he says these days.
No, he did. One thing you must believe that he says quite frequently is how many titles he's won. He was at it again yesterday.
Yeah, for you young'uns, you know.
I won eight titles, me. Is it the new, there were only 2 points, Spurs had only won 2 points when I got here. I mean, we're at that level, aren't we?
Well, he can't open his mouth without saying it, which is quite amusing.
I like the fact we haven't named him yet. Let's move on then quickly and talk about the other game, which maybe did have something riding on it, given that people were looking at Brighton's fixtures between now and the end of the season, thinking this is a team with their recent record and the teams they're going to be facing that could end up in trouble. But a big point for them at home to Spurs. Tom, did you see this?
I did, yeah. Yeah. And I thought they were very impressive, Brighton. I thought they were good value for the point. Obviously fell behind, but had the good fortune and also the nous to get themselves back into the game immediately. And another Serge Aurier rush of blood to the head, costing Tottenham, conceding the penalty that Pascal Gross scored. I think there's a feeling with Brighton. I mean, they're six games without a win in all competitions, but I think we felt for a while that they've got enough behind them to stay up. But you look at the fixtures, 8 points clear, but you'd want another win, you'd think, just to make sure. I think they'll be fine, but those fixtures are a bit intimidating.
I think it's quite possible, looking at the fixture list, which is Burnley away, United at home, City away, Liverpool away, that I think it's quite possible they might pick up no more points between now and the end
of the season. It's conceivable, yeah.
So it is just a race to see, a bit like the starship in Star Wars, you know, will it run out of gas while the people are chasing it? It's that kind of narrative.
Yeah, but are Southampton going to win two games to get them above the relegation line?
Well, that's the thing, isn't it?
No, I don't think so.
Also, would you have said that Brighton would get a point against Spurs?
Well, actually, I might, because I went to see when they played at Wembley and they really frustrated Tottenham that night. So I guess it made sense from that point of view.
I suppose in looking at that run-in, where we're looking at teams of the same calibre as Spurs and they've got a point against Spurs. So
yeah, and teams that maybe like Spurs on Tuesday that might have their thoughts elsewhere.
Exactly. I mean, that City game, it'll probably entirely depend on whether City are genuine about chasing these records and being statistically the best ever team that we've seen in the Premier League. If not, then again, that you might fancy Brighton to get something out of that game.
Pascal Gross, is he the signing of the season?
Relatively speaking, I would say so, yeah.
Pound for point.
Gross margins.
Hey!
There you go.
6 goals and 8 assists from Brighton's 32 goals. Oh, which means that only one player has a higher percentage of involvement in his team's goals, and that's, of course, Mo Salah.
Hmm.
Interesting. Anyway, so there you
imagine
go.
Imagine if they were on the same team, James.
Wow. That's the stuff of dreams, isn't it, really? Man United Spurs, are you up for this one, David?
I'm more up for it than I am for Chelsea Southampton.
Really?
Yeah, that's a foregone conclusion.
Do you think so?
Yeah.
Because Southampton made a real go of it when they met in the league last weekend.
Yeah.
2-0 up.
Yeah, but I mean,
and
that's going to scar that, though.
Really?
Giving 2 goals up.
Don't you think that, especially after the way that it turned out and that whole Marcus Alonso business, Southampton will be really fired up to win this and continue their chances of doing a Wigan?
Well, they've not
Martinez double.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've not been fired up all season, so I don't know why it's going to change on Saturday or Sunday, sorry.
No Marcus Alonso. I presume he didn't appeal. I think he had until, was it Wednesday evening, to lodge any kind of appeal if he wanted to, but he banged to rights there.
Yeah, it was a bit of a nasty one.
Very nasty one.
Yeah, and a bit sly as well.
But there's that, and also I suppose what's going on with Antonio Rudiger as well, because yeah, he seems to have fallen out of favour, partly because he's questioned Conte's tactics, or at least Conte believes that he did, and he wasn't in the side. So will he be back for this? You know, is this another case of Conte just basically saying, you know, Diego Costa, David Luiz, do not cross me, because you know, that might end up costing Chelsea.
Yeah. 3-2 last weekend, I mentioned. Last time they met in the FA Cup, it was 5-1 to Chelsea. Tom, are you prepared to argue there's a nugget of drama in this game?
I mean, I think
Tom has just grimaced at the thought.
Quite literally. The difficulty for Southampton is they played so well against Chelsea last weekend, which would have felt like a great dress rehearsal, and then let 3 goals in at the end.
Yeah.
I wonder whether Chelsea might start with Olivier Giroud now that he's proved how effective he can be against Southampton. Personally think he's a better foil for players like Hazard and Willian, who need a centre forward who sort of gives them, you know, helps them to establish a presence in the opposition penalty area with his layoffs and his 1-2s and everything else, rather than someone like Morata, who spends more time running away from the ball. Southampton will take heart from the fact that they played so well to begin with against Chelsea. But Chelsea's league form has been so strange. I mean, their form in general has been so strange since the turn of the year. We know this is the last thing that they have to play for this season, so you'd expect that they're going to be fully motivated. So, yeah, it's hard to see much reason for optimism for Southampton.
I think it doesn't make a difference whether it's Morata or Giroud who's playing up front. If Chelsea get crosses into the box, they just can't defend them. I mean, I could have stopped after they can't defend, but they really can't.
Specifically on crosses.
Yeah, specifically on crosses, yeah.
All right. Anyway, so Chelsea, strong favourites to go through against Southampton on Sunday. Saturday, who do you see, Tom? Spurs or the Man United?
I think it'll be interesting because the last time these two teams met at Wembley in January in Spurs' home league game, United were very poor. That was a game when Christian Eriksen scored after, 10 seconds or something. Phil Jones then scored that sensational own goal. The game when Paul Pogba had his touchline row with Jose Mourinho and was hooked with about half an hour to play. What's been noticeable in the last few games when Pogba's played a lot better is that Mourinho's now allowing him to play in a midfield three. Okay, he's done that at times throughout the season, but I think what's been really important in Pogba's improved form in the last couple of matches is the fact he's had Ander Herrera alongside him, which just gives him a bit more freedom to get forward. Pogba was really the symbol of that defeat against Spurs. He was playing alongside Matic. There was no one else in that defensive midfield zone. Matic got completely overrun by Son, by Eriksen, by Ali. I expect United will be a bit more cautious. They're coming off the back of a home defeat against West Bromwich Albion. But you put that aside, and United's form in games against their main rivals in the last couple of months has been really impressive. So I think it'll be a lot closer than that January game.
Quick note on the keepers, because that's kind of contractual, David. First of all, Vorm will be in for Lloris. Is that actually an upgrade for Spurs? We were talking about him on Monday, and Echo Sonic says, I'd love to hear David's thoughts on Ugo, his form, and how a keeper manages those times when they're under pressure.
Yeah, he's having a poor season. I think I defend him for quite a long time, and once the errors start adding up and totting up, then it's difficult to defend. He's changed the way that he's played since he's first come to the Premier League. He's still a very proactive goalkeeper. So if you're very proactive and you're coming to get involved in sort of long balls and crosses, then the likelihood is you're going to make more mistakes.
Right.
I think there's doubts crept into his game now. So you know when you see against Manchester City. The first goal, he's got no right to come for the first long ball from company. But I think that the fact that he's travelled so far and that plays on his mind, thinking, could I have come for it? I don't think he could have. I'm just making that clear because it's straight in Jesus' path. But when the next ball comes in, he comes rushing out. I think that's in his mind. And that's because of the doubts that are in his mind, whether he's making the right decisions or not, because he is making decisions to deal with things, to get involved. And they turned out to be the wrong ones.
Does Spurs need a new keeper or a new keeping coach?
Not at all. And I cannot stand anybody saying, and it goes for David De Gea as well, that people saying, oh, Lloris is the most overrated goalkeeper in the Premier League. When for, how long has he been there? 6-7 years? You know, he's been in phenomenal form. And of course, like I said, if he's a proactive goalkeeper and he gets involved in a lot of situations that other keepers wouldn't, he, you know, runs a bigger chance of...
But does he need a new goalkeeping coach?
No, I don't think so. No, it's if we're talking about someone like Joe Hart, I think that's a situation that probably needs to happen for him. You know, we've seen him on Monday night against Stoke, you know, making another error and
more errors than clean sheets.
Yeah, and he still, I mean, I think Petr Cech still made more errors than him this season as well.
Mm.
But it's a problem for him that's you know, going back to goalkeeping coaches. A lot of people would think that Joe Hart's bad form, it started in the Euros, you know, the goals against Wales and Iceland and then being dropped by Pep. But it goes way before that. You know, his peak years at Manchester City was under Mancini, under Massimo Baratta.
That was the goalkeeping coach, yeah.
And the two of them had a bit of a fractious relationship. They didn't really get on. But a big part of that was because Baratta focused on his weaknesses. And every day it was distribution and come for crosses and deal with high balls. And he didn't like that at all. And so, but it was the best thing for him. That's what he needed. It wasn't what he wanted to do, it was what he needed. And it showed his performances. And ever since then, there's just been a gradual decline.
And we
talking about the doubt with Lloris, you know, once you don't concentrate on your weaknesses and you only focus on your strengths, once your strengths start winning and something happens with them, the whole game falls apart and your positioning, decision making, everything just goes to pot.
All right. Looking forward to Arsenal's clash with West Ham. That'll be Petr Cech against potentially Joe Hart. Wow. Could be fast call.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show, sponsored by Paddy Power, the home of the Money Back Special. Keep listening to the end of the podcast to find out more.
Ooh, listeners, Accrington Stanley.
Who are they?
They're from the third tier of English football for the first time ever. Oh. They just got promotion to League One, despite having the second smallest budget in League Two. Sealing promotion with a 2-0 win against Yeovil. Both goals from Billy Key, top scorer in League Two, as you no doubt know, Tom Williams.
The key to their promotion.
Oh-ho!
Too easy.
No, that's good. Here's a stat, sort of, a kind of fact thing. Manager is John Coleman. He's been with the club off and on. There was a kind of 2.5 year bit where he went off and did spells at Rochdale, Southport, and excitingly Sligo Rovers. Anyway, in the period in which he's been at Accrington Stanley, only one season did they not improve on the previous year. Only one season did they not continue their upward climb from the sixth tier to quite literally the third. Anyway, you can hear more of that kind of thing in the Totally Football League show with Ian McIntosh. If you're after some top Italian chat, Tom.
Big time.
Golazzo, which dropped Wednesday afternoon, is all about the Gran Torino. Il Grande Torino, not the Clint Eastwood film.
No.
And it sounds a little bit like this.
Salvato dal palo su tiro di Ossola, sentimenti abbattuto da questa ripresa al volo di Loic.
Also, Totally Football quiz David is back on Friday. Have you ever played this?
I haven't, no.
It's too tough for you, is it? It is tough, though.
I actually did a GCSE maths exam last night.
No way.
Yeah, I did, yeah. My girlfriend's son was doing some mock exams, so I went online and did one, and I got 70%, which is probably more than I got when I was at school.
So what would that equate to? Is that like a B or something? Or
a C, would it be?
Really, 70%?
Well, I think it depends which paper you do, whether you're doing the top paper or there's like an intermediary paper.
There's either foundation or higher, did a higher.
Right.
Yeah. And sounds I was decent. Surprised myself, actually.
Mm. Yeah. So this was a GCSE, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I got an A. For me, it was an O-level. I got an A at maths O-level. But pleasingly, I got an O at maths A-level. So I kind of brought it full circle. I might go online and try one myself. That'll be a laugh. Anyway, good, but that wasn't an official thing. That was just you trying it to, you know,
that's how he spends his evenings.
Empathy
yeah.
in that.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, fun. Yeah, just see how I would do.
Okay. Yeah. Did your girlfriend do it as well?
No.
Well, that would have been great, kind of head to head.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is usually a more exciting household than this, doing GCSE math exam. Well,
that does sound pretty thrilling. Yeah. Anyway, if that kind of thing excites you, then do join us on Friday at 12:30 British summer time. When Totally Football Quiz will be live with five really tough questions from Opta. Tough but intriguing kind of questions that you will be dying to use on your friends just as soon as the quiz is over. Also, there are prizes. There's a 2016-17 Nuremberg away shirt from classicfootballshirts.co.uk, Panini stickers, boom, and also Scott Murray's new book. Scott's written about the story of the First Division. Facebook.com/TotallyFootballShow. Now, rest of the Premier League. Monday, saw a key game at the London Stadium. You mentioned it before, West Ham Stoke. Brilliant from Andy Carroll, who hadn't touched a ball, well, I imagine he had, but in anger, as it were, in 4 months. Mm. Coming in and that unleashing that wonderful swivelling shot.
I'm very disappointed in Andy Carroll, actually.
Oh.
I'm very disappointed. Because initially when he was at Newcastle, I would have thought he would go on to far, far greater things than what he has done. I know injuries have played their part in that as well, but he was a superb player at Newcastle and played against him a couple of times in the Championship. Okay, it's a Championship level, it's a level below, but he's just a phenomenal target man, and it's not like they played a long ball game at all, but he just simplified his game so much and was such a great focal point to play through. And his ability with his head, everything was played up with his head, but he could pass the ball with his head as well as any player could with his feet. Wow. At the time. And I like to see him do well. I like to see him score goals like this, because it's a real shame what's happened to his career, I think.
Technically, it was a brilliant goal and very un-Carroll-esque. How old is he now, Andy Carroll? Is there still time if he was to resolve the injury thing, or do you think there are other issues there?
Yeah, perhaps there's other issues because of his, you know, the way that he lives his life.
If he moved in with Kevin Nolan, for example, would that...
Well, it worked at the time, didn't it? Yeah.
I think a fit and firing Andy Carroll, I think you put him in the England squad. I think you, if you're going to a big tournament, what you want in the striking department is options, alternatives, and Andy Carroll offers something that very few strikers in English football offer, and is also the sort of player who, you know, we've long thought was disappearing from the game, is the sort of player who opposition teams get really worried about, because he is just this big battering ram striker. And yeah, you know, a very tidy finish against Oak, but he's got that, like he does have different types of finishing. He isn't just blood and thunder. There is a cuteness to him. It's just he just can't stay fit long enough.
He's 29, Andy Carroll. And he was discussing his goal with famous West Ham fan and Cockney wide boy, Danny Dyer.
Oh, really? Mm. Let's have a listen, listeners.
You didn't realise how much we miss you, to be fair. I mean, what did you think when that ball was coming towards you?
I thought it was pretty not a good ball, to be honest. I thought it was a bit behind me. I just told him in there. I made a bad one look a good one, to be honest. He's put it in. Didn't reach the box, so I've had to hesitate my run and get on the end of it.
Beautiful feeling, though, to be fair. The crowd just went mental. Why is it so stressful watching West Ham?
One of the great episodes of Who Do You Think You Are,
where
he finds he is related to royalty. And if you watch that sped up on YouTube, it is quite something.
super. Can't remember what we were talking about. We were talking about, West Ham Stoke. That took place on Monday. And Adam Bate pointing out, this is what you were touching on before, David, that Joe Hart's now made as many errors leading to goals this season as every other English goalkeeper in the Premier League put together.
Yeah, and I was quite surprised this morning reading David Seaman's words, saying that in his eyes, Joe Hart is still the number, will still be the number one in the summer.
We might see...
Spent a long time away from football, David Seaman.
Am I right in thinking that Butland, Forster and Foster would be ahead of Joe Hart in the pecking order for England now?
And Pickford.
And Pickford.
And probably Seaman.
Nick Pope. And probably David Seaman.
Yeah. Right.
This is the question when people ask him, you know, whether he should be on the squad for the summer. If the first two choices of Butland and Pickford are injured, and you're going to your third choice, who would you rather be playing in a big game in the World Cup? Now I know Nick Pope's, you know, he's inexperienced, but he's come off the back of a brilliant season.
Right.
Or Joe Hart, who's made quite a few mistakes this year. You know, who would you be more confident in? Even if you were Gareth Southgate and thinking about what's happened before, he's been part of all the qualifying games and, you know, he's got 70 odd caps, 80 caps, or whatever it is. I'm asking you now, James. Who would you know?
I see where you're trying to go with this, but isn't the knock against Nick Pope, and there's a good reason, by the way, that I'm not the person making this decision, but isn't the knock against Nick Pope is that, skilled though he is, his skill set doesn't fit with what Gareth Southgate wants from a keeper vis-a-vis distribution and stuff. But then again, as I say that, I'm thinking neither probably would Joe Hart.
No. But also, if you think of it going into the latter stages, if we meet the latter stages, past the group stage, and you're playing against a very good side who are probably better in possession of the football than us, aren't we going to be playing a deeper defensive block, a little bit more like Burnley?
Mm.
And you're going to be under pressure and you're not going to have the ball as much.
I'll say Nick Pope. Let's bring this to an end. Mate, could we take Andy Carroll as our third choice goalkeeper?
If Andy Carroll was fit and in form and scoring goals and coming off a consistent few months, I think he's exactly the sort of option that you want in your squad.
Right, but based on... Even if he was to have a string of games between here and the end of the season...
I mean, yeah, this is not me.
Because I like what
I'm
you're
not
saying.
Banging the Andy Carroll drum.
No,
or
no.
If I am,
but
I'm
I like
just,
what you're saying about,
you know,
an alternative
percussion.
And one that the opposition would find scary.
Because I think when we all... indulge ourselves in the exercise of picking the kind of ideal England squad. I think
all the time,
constantly. I mean, like, I think a mistake people make is just picking the best players in each position.
Right.
And that's not what a successful international squad, particularly at a tournament, is about. It's about making sure that if plan A isn't working, there's a plan B and a plan C, which is why I think there's always room for a striker like Carroll in a squad, just because he gives you something completely different.
I see. Newcastle, however, this Monday will be in action against Everton, and they are only 1 point behind them. Newcastle have won their last four. Everton haven't won in three. So that could be interesting. Everton also have been rocked by the club asking the fans what they think about the manager. And that rumour that Big Sam's going to go big shock this at the end of the season.
What?
Yeah, apparently so.
I mean, this is a grudge match for him, isn't it? You know, against Newcastle.
Well, that's true.
You know, he loves to stick it up teams that have kind of done him wrong in his eyes in the past.
In a parallel universe...
Everton will be one of those teams in the future.
Well, undoubtedly. In a parallel universe, he would actually be making those decisions about Andy Carroll and Joe Hart himself right now. We would be heading towards a World Cup with Sam, drawing up his plans for Russia. This is a man who went four games at Everton this season without his side having a single shot on target.
Yeah, I mean, Everton are sort of stuck, and they have been ever since it became apparent that they weren't about to get sucked into the relegation dogfight. They've got a manager who the fans don't like, who isn't helping them to evolve their football in any way, and I think everyone at the club is just sort of waiting for the end of the season. And, you know, you've got the minor intrigue of this battle for eighth place with Leicester, who are above them, and Newcastle, who are underneath them. But, you know, does it make any difference, really? If you're an Everton fan, I think it's different if you're Burnley, say, and you're having
Newcastle,
a historic season.
Not.
Oh, and for Newcastle as well, I think. But I think you look at the expectations Everton had when they went into the season, the amount of money they spent, wanting to break into the top six. I think they just want to get to the end of the season now, to be honest.
Absolutely. Speaking of people jockeying for position, Arsenal, West Ham... which we mentioned from the goalkeeping point of view. But all in all, it looks like, you know, there's not much on it, but it could be quite fun, this. Arsenal could be behind Burnley by this point. There could be even 4 points behind Burnley. Burnley tonight are playing Leicester. Burnley this evening taking on Chelsea, who they beat, of course, start the season at the Bridge. And then they've got Stoke before Arsenal take the field against West Ham. Arsenal and West Ham last season Their clashes brought two wins for the Gunners, 3-0 and 5-1. However, this year it's been tighter. Danny Welbeck scored the winner and a 1-0 win at the Emirates in the League Cup, and it was 0-0 at the London Stadium. Mm. Let's have a little palate cleanser and then return with other tidbits.
Listeners, starting up the Totally Football Show was a hairy business. Fortunately, Cornerstone have been with us every step of the way. Why? Because they're in the business of making hairy things smooth, like your face. Cornerstone's award-winning blades will give you the smoothest shave possible, and their range of balms, creams and exfoliators are all environmentally friendly, alcohol-free and suitable for the most sensitive skin. Head to cornerstone.co.uk/totally to see the range for yourself, get £10 off your first order and have it delivered right to your door. And you'll find out why tens of thousands of men have switched over to Cornerstone.
Here's a question from Soccer Never Sleeps. Predictably, the PFA Team of the Year was made up entirely of players from the Big Six, minus Arsenal. I'd be interested in hearing who is in your non-Big Six Premier League 11 for the season. So there you go. Now, we've asked Tom, David and James to prepare their lists. Where you go, James?
Are we going per position or are we
I don't mind. What's quickest?
Are we going 4-4-2?
Well, you're the manager, you decide. Okay, just list your players and then we'll... Yeah.
Okay, so I went for the V-man, Jamie Vardy, up front.
Okay.
Has to be. I've then gone for three players behind him in a 4-2-3-1. So I've gone with Wilfried Zaha, no surprises there, Riyad Mahrez, mm-hmm. and because I like him, Richarlison.
Okay.
The two behind...
Richarlison, sorry, back up. Did you just say Richarlison?
Yes.
On what basis would he possibly be in your team of the season?
Because I just remember the trickery from the first half of the season.
Yeah.
And that sort of thing.
Not your best 11 from September 2017, but for the season.
Yeah, but still, there's some moments there which, you know, had Watford not bottled it in the way they did in after the 90th minute, they would probably be in seventh or eighth right now.
Does that choice surprise and bewilder you as much as it does me, Tom, David?
A little bit. I mean, Richarlison was very exciting.
Without scoring very much.
In the early weeks of the season, but hasn't really done a single thing since. I mean, I get that he's an exciting player.
Mm. Anyway, sorry, James.
Gone for two in midfield. One's maybe a little bit... leaves that midfield a little bit open. You know, I had to have Pascal Gross in there.
Yeah.
Doucouré.
Yeah.
Yeah. At the back, I've gone for Ryan Bertrand,
mm-hmm.
Ben Mee, Jamal Lascelles.
Mm-hmm.
And right back is tricky.
There's a real dearth of decent right backs at the moment.
Obviously, I've gone for Pontifex Maximus between the sticks.
Nice.
In the Pope.
All right.
But where's my right back gone?
Don't know. Probably someone from Watford, is it?
I might just put Richarlison in there.
Yeah. All right. David, what about yours?
I've had to go for three at the back because I needed to put Nathan Ake in there.
Fine, however you want to set
it up. So I've gone for Dunk, Ake and Tarkovsky, back three.
Nice.
All Brighton, Hollebas, wing backs.
Uh-huh.
And then I've got Pascal Gross, Wilfred Ndidi and Doucouré midfield.
Nice.
And Vardy and Glenn Murray up front.
Very nice. Tom?
I've gone flat back four. Bit more conventional. Nick Pope in goal. Got Matt Lowton of Burnley at right back.
Mm.
Scratched around a bit for the fullbacks because I don't think there are that many great fullbacks around this season. Harry Maguire and Alfie Mawson at centre back. I've gone for Charlie Daniels of Bournemouth at left back. I don't watch Bournemouth all that much, but I enjoy watching Charlie Daniels. And he does bring in the points. And he scored that absolute belter against City.
Yes, a long time ago.
Start of the season.
It's
still.
Like you have Richarlison.
Hey, come on. He's built on that. I've got Abdoulaye Doucouré holding in front of the back four. I've then got a four-man attacking midfield band. Riyad Mahrez on the right, Pascal Gross and Jerdan Shaqiri in the middle.
Right, good shot, Shaqiri.
Wilfred Zaha on the left and Jamie Vardy up front.
Okay, Vardy, consensus, a plebiscite. But one or two other interesting... That's thought-provoking.
Did you have one, James?
No, I didn't bother making one.
Is there anyone that you look at and think someone's missing in that team?
Now, I have the memory of a guppy fish. but producer Ben has. He's got Pope in goal. Yep. He's got a back three of Tarkovsky, Lascelles and Mawson. Masuaku, interesting.
Mm.
Gross and Milivojevic. That's a good shout for Palace. With Lewis Cook and Zaha rounding out a talented midfield. And then up front, Vardy and Glenn Murray.
I almost went Masuaku at left back.
Did
but
you?
Because given this is an alternative PFA 11, I wondered whether him having spat at a fellow player during the season might rule him out on moral grounds. But I really enjoy watching him, though.
Not ninth place Everton players either for a team that's quite high up.
Yeah. Interesting.
Not even
significant,
considered.
You feel. Significant. Mm. Mm. Right. Other things that people have sent. Adam Jones, James, rather, on a related note, says, thinking about the PFA Team of the Year, if each of Europe's top leagues picked their best 11 players, which league would come out on top? I know it's one of those which...
Spain.
Because of Messi and Ronaldo.
Yeah.
Imagine.
Yeah. But, you know...
Would they pass to each other, I wonder?
That's one question.
Who take the free kicks?
And... You could get at a team of Liga players, surely, couldn't you?
Spain by an absolute mile.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
By just, mile. I mean, you'd just be a joint Madrid-Barcelona team, wouldn't it? With, I mean, who else would you have in from, I don't know, maybe
a couple
Griezmann
of Atleti players, Godin.
Yeah. Godin.
I mean, would Oblak make it in ahead of the other options?
He would, yeah.
Potentially, yeah.
Yeah. Not having Griezmann, though.
No?
No,
is it the hair highlights or
no,
that?
No, I like the hair. It's the inconsistency.
Or his fancy dress.
It's a celebration. That's what gets to me.
Is that?
Yeah. I don't know why it irks me so much.
Which one's
that? Yeah, it's that little sort of that one.
Oh, yeah. With the kind of the call me.
Yeah.
The double call me gesture.
It's all right.
Yeah. I'm not saying it's not all right. I'm just saying personally
shades,
it irks me.
Shades of Ronaldinho a little bit. Yeah.
I wonder if you're particularly attuned to goal-scoring celebrations as somebody who's had to witness them. At your moment of greatest professional disappointment, seeing other people celebrating your own misfortune.
Do you know what the worst thing is the celebration music? So, like, it's Celtic Park and Ibrox. If it was Henrik Larsson, which it quite often was, they have the Magnificent Seven playing in the background. That was quite... and Ibrox had this dance music. I can't remember the tune. Yeah, but that's... cause sleepless nights when I close my eyes.
Has anyone ever goaded you after scoring? Like deliberately sort of got in your face?
Not really. I don't
Is
think
that
so.
Particular song from Ibrox like a trigger for you? If we were just to play it now.
Which dance number?
Only a trigger for hatred. That's what it is.
Okay, that was good. Joseph Bradfield says, speaking as a big fan of teeny clubs making it into Europe, I can't wait to hear the pod give an extensive preview to this year's Russian Cup final. Do you know who's in it? Tonzo and Avangarde.
Avangarde sounds
like a French team.
Something from Norse mythology or something.
Isn't it? Hope whoever wins gets drawn against Burnley. Joseph, I presume you were being facetious when you said Pod's extensive preview. We're not familiar with either. I think even Sasha Gurionov, judging from his Twitter feed, was bewildered at these two teams reaching the final. They're both come from very much the nether regions of some, Russian football.
Some great names in Russian football, though. I love Krylia Sovetov. I don't know why. Yeah.
I might do too, actually.
That's another one.
Makashkar.
Tom Tomsk. Yeah. Is that an actual name? Have I invented that?
Yeah, I think that sounds
right. No, that's right, yeah.
No, it's a Russian sat-nav system, isn't it?
Ha! Hey.
I thought I deserved a much bigger laugh, and I'm disappointed in you, Jim.
Sorry.
Okay, so the Eredivisie, they have great team names. And speaking of minnows reaching, basically getting a chance at cup glory, how about the French Cup? Tom, once again, it's almost like the big clubs don't care about the French Cup, but the Les Herbiers beat their fellow third division side Chambly to reach the French Cup final for the first time. Who are they going to be playing?
Paris Saint-Germain.
Ow.
Of course. But it would be one of the great David and Goliath cup finals in prospect. Little Les Herbiers from the National, which is the amateur third division of French football. They're the fifth amateur team to reach the Coupe de France final.
In how long?
In the history of the competition.
Like so it is something that happens more in France than anywhere.
Yeah,
the
I mean,
the Coupe de France.
The Coupe de France is weighted in favour of the smaller teams because they play at home when they're drawn against the team in a higher league. So you do get upsets. I mean, the last few years, Calais, famously, they reached the final in 2000. You had Amiens the season after that, and then another amateur team, Quevilly, got to the final in 2012.
Super Calais, go ballistic.
Would have been the headline had they not lost. And PSG, meanwhile, are looking for a third domestic treble in 4 years and a fourth successive Coupe de France. They haven't lost a domestic cup match, PSG, since January 2014.
Damn. I think we're all Les Herbiers fans at this point, aren't
we? Oh, yeah.
What does Les Herbiers mean? The lawnmowers or something?
So Herbier means herbarium.
What?
And a herbarium is a collection of preserved plant specimens used for scientific study.
I see.
So I'm guessing if you are an herbier, you are someone who collects pressed plants and flowers and that for scientific studies. Not one of the great football club names.
Right. You'd have to say. There'll be a backstory to all that, though not necessarily a fascinating one.
Mm. I'll dig it out for next time.
Do.
I wonder what their pressing game is like.
Hey.
Oh, dear. Good. Ooh. So that'll be happening on May the 8th, or Wednesday evening. I do hope that's on... That'll probably be on BT Sports, kind of random stuff they show.
Mm.
In France, by the way, of course, PSG are the champions. Second place is the big question, Tom. Since you're here, you got 4 points between Monaco, Lyon and Marseille. Monaco, of course, were handed a... Was it 7-1, the drubbing?
7-1.
7-1 drubbing last Sunday night.
Yeah, I mean, it looked as if Monaco had second place sewn up in that they'd been on a decent run of form. But then this absolute shellacking that PSG gave them has cut their lead to 4 points. Lyon are suddenly on a great run of form. They're looking for a sixth straight win. They're away at Dijon Friday night. Nabil Fekir back fit. Memphis Depay banging the goals in. They're looking good. Marseille are, I think they're level on points with Lyon. And they snatched the victory at Troyes last weekend, a late winner by Florian Thauvin, coming off the back of that fantastic win over Leipzig in the Europa League quarterfinals.
On that before. The brilliant game. And Dimitri Payet's performance in that was astonishing. Do Marseille now, the Frank McCourt takeover and Remy Garcia coming in, are they now actually looking like a really promising side? And how do you rate their chances in the Europa League, of winning the whole thing?
I mean, they've become quite an obdurate side under Rudy Garcia, and their approach in terms of transfer strategy has been very different to what you see in most big European clubs. Is they've bought a lot of very seasoned players, guys like Luis Gustavo, they've bought Steve Mandanda, and they do look like a very solid team. Obviously, that the draw has been kind to them in Europa League, and that they've avoided Arsenal and Atletico, so they've got a decent chance of making the final. Not sure I could see them beating either of those teams if they were to get to the final, but there is a sort of a steely core to Marseille, and then you've got players like Payet, Florian Thauvin, who we all remember from his pretty miserable experience at Newcastle, having the season of his career. I think he's got the best figures in Ligue 1 for sort of goals and assists combined behind Neymar and someone else at PSG. So, yeah, they're looking decent, Marseille, and they've turned a corner with this new recruitment drive. And it's going to go right down to the line, I think. Them and Lyon and Marseille trying to get those two Champions League places.
Liverpool are attempting to become the first Premier League side to beat Darren Moore's West Brom this Saturday. David, the brow.
He's done very well, hasn't he?
Hasn't he?
Yeah.
Were you anticipating this?
I knew he'd get a reaction for them. He's well-liked, well-respected, he's an authoritative figure. But I think it was a little bit disrespectful that, I can't remember who was listening to on commentary, but they were saying that he's the great motivator, Darren Moore, and I think it was a little bit disrespectful thinking that, well, he hadn't got it right tactically, which he obviously has in the last two games, so it's he probably deserves more credit than that.
Beating United last time out, they have quite a good record against Liverpool, actually. They knocked Liverpool out of the FA Cup, drew 0-0 with them in the league, and Liverpool have only won once at the Hawthorns in the last 5 years. Still, they do have Mohamed Salah.
They do indeed, but will their minds be on that game against Roma on Tuesday night?
Oh, that's a good shout. Game against Roma. I bet it will. Yeah. Excellent. Okay. Man City, who don't have anything else to think about really now, except for making silly videos, they are hosting Swansea. I bet Swansea are thankful that West Brom handed City the title last weekend.
Yeah, there's an element of that. But as I said before, I think City probably will be gunning for these records, you know, hitting the 100-point barrier. You know, getting to more than 100 goals and all this sort of thing. So I think if I were Pep, that would be where I would giving a certain sense of purpose to the remainder of the season. It's just, you know, the thing is that a lot of these teams that are fighting relegation will be facing City in the next few weeks. So yeah.
You can hear the enthusiasm ebbing out of your voice.
Yeah.
As the sentence crawls towards its conclusion.
Be merciful.
So let me just back on with one other game, Watford against Palace, featuring your favourite player in the world, Richarlison.
Possibly, yeah. In fact, two of the players that I had in that team, Zaha and Richarlison. This kind of fixture really sums up Watford's season in that in the reverse fixture, what they were leading from the 4th minute till the 89th minute and still contrived to lose. So, had they not done as they did in, another 4 games, they would be a lot higher up in the table than they are now.
Mm.
I'm not sure how to judge what Javi Gracia has done there because he's only had, 3 wins in, maybe 11 games there? Hasn't really been able to energise a team which, until Marco Silva was flirting with anyone and everyone, looked like they were potentially going to be challenging where Burnley are for a Europa League spot.
Yeah, the tart. Okay. All right, James, thanks for rounding up the Premier League weekend. Let's move on to Germany. Monday night, Mainz taking on Freiburg in a relegation scrap when this happened.
Welcome back. Extraordinary scenes. Mainz against Wolfsburg. The referee blew for half-time, sent the players away into the dressing room and then was told to go to his VAR to check the last cross of the half by Brozinski, which deflected off Kemp's hand. The goalkeeper saved. He then said penalty. De Blasis came out, put the ball down on the spot. Freiburg have only just come out. I've never seen anything like it.
I mean, absolutely crackers. You just look at the footage. It's just such an absurd thing. You know, you've got guys halfway down the tunnel, guys back in the changing room, you know, settling down into their half-time, being suddenly summoned back out onto the pitch so that they can take this one penalty. And I think just to compound the confusion and the totally surreal feel of it all was the fact that it wasn't even a complete cast-iron penalty. I mean, it was given for handball. The guy's got his hand out, the sort of thing that you generally see given as a penalty. But it wouldn't have been the greatest injustice in the world if it hadn't been given as a penalty. So they all troop back. They troop back on. The penalty goes in, and it's from what I gather, the arrival of VAR in the Bundesliga has been pretty controversial all season long, and it's an example of just the sort of kind of ill thought out implementation of something that will inevitably help the sport, and that's what's putting people off, and that's the big fear for the World Cup is that we're going to have stuff like this constantly, I think there is a risk that this World Cup ends up being remembered as the World Cup that, you know, was sort of, if not destroyed by VAR, then certainly tarnished by VAR.
Varnished,
that's what I was grasping for.
Yeah. Well, that's the fear, isn't it, Tom? But in the short term, it's left Freiburg in a world of pain, very much in the frying pan, if you were out of the frying pan, in the fire, probably. They're in the relegation playoff spot and 16th in the Bundesliga. Yikes. Do you know what, though? I actually think it's a brilliant idea what they did. If you think about it, one of the big knocks against VAR is the fact that it takes up loads of time and interrupts the game for the controversial, reviewing controversial thing. You've got 15 minutes at the end of the first half when nobody's doing anything. And quite frankly, a lot of the supporters are sitting there with nothing to look at. Why not use that 15 minutes to review and redress anything that's happened in the first half? I'm serious about this.
And you have about 5 or 6 different free kicks and penalties to take when everyone re-emerges.
But now we've seen this and this, so we'll sort that. And then you've got, and it really is going to ramp up the tension for the second half. And you do a similar, maybe 5-minute spell at the end of the game.
It's an idea.
I think so. Well,
does nobody else genuinely like the drama, though?
Of what? Of that half-time?
Yeah. I mean, it's...
Reza di Conte.
It was supposed to be brought in to stop all the drama, to stop all the squabbling about decisions. And it's
dramatic when Tom tells the story like that, but to sit through it... Oh.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's not like it's any advantage to the team who's got to take the penalty, because they've got to come back out as well. Mm. There's a lot of pressure on them as well.
I mean, you look at the way that technology like this has been incorporated in rugby, in cricket, in tennis, and there it is part of the drama because everyone in the stadium, everyone watching at home knows what's happening. Like you get at the cricket when, you know, the batsman might have edged one and everyone's waiting for the decision. You get the oohs of the crowd, etc. And I'm sure we'll get to that point with football. The problem at the moment is that when you get one of these VAR decisions, the referee just stands there with his finger in his ear and no one knows what's going on.
Yeah, but... The advantage those sports have had is that they've been able to have these teething problems and they've been able to get through them without anybody noticing because nobody cares about those sports.
Yeah. Well, people can.
Apart from cricket, crickets, I like cricket. Cricket's nice, but it's true though. When they've trialled all these systems, it's been without fuss. There've been
controversies and there's been resistance, as you'd expect. But it just doesn't get as much attention because it's not football.
By the way, that talk of the players having to come back out onto the field when they thought the first half was over reminds me of one of the classic stories of the genre, which is a tale from Romania, told to us by, of course, Jonathan Wilson. It involved Ceausescu's pet team, who I think were called Scorni Sesti, and they had to win by a certain goal difference to be champions that year. So they basically matched the scoreline of their nearest rivals and went off the field happy, celebrating. But the problem was there was no direct communications between where the other team was playing and their home stadium. There were no phone lines or anything. So the word was apparently being passed from one to the other by a series of policemen posted at 1 kilometre intervals on the road. And anyway, this slightly sluggish means of getting the message across meant that after they'd gone off the field, word reached the stadium that Ceausescu hadn't scored. There'd been a late goal of the other one. So Ceausescu were called back out by the referee to score a couple of extra ones to make sure. Brilliant stuff. Anyway, speaking of Germany, the Pokal final lineup has been decided this week, and it is Bayern Munich against Eintracht Frankfurt, which means, James?
It's a Niko Kovac derby, is it?
Yeah. His last match as Eintracht Frankfurt manager will be against the side that he takes over in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
That's dramatic, isn't it? We're going to take another quick pause and then we're back with all the Indian football jargon you can handle and also very exciting stuff from Italy.
Listeners, you know there's more to football than being called back from the dressing room to take a penalty, getting promoted to the third tier for the first time, or being handed the league title by your biggest rivals after they lost at home to the worst team in the division. Yes, football's fundamentally a simple game, but you can't truly understand football without understanding the modern world, and you can't understand the modern world without understanding its most popular sport. Throughout the fantastic first series of the Game of Our Lives podcast, the football historian David Goldblatt has been tackling themes like human nature, globalisation and geopolitics through the prism of the beautiful game. Now here at the Totally Football Show, we're getting very excited indeed about this summer's World Cup. But when it all kicks off in Russia in June, the absence of just two countries will mean that over a third of the global population won't be represented. India and China aren't traditional football powers, but in recent years they've become huge and lucrative markets for the sport. And in India, where cricket is king, football is fast catching up.
The models of fandom that are followed, I think, are closer to the kind that you'd see in South American countries. They'll go anywhere for a bit of the pretty game.
If you want to learn more about why football matters, make sure you listen to Game of Our Lives on Apple Podcasts and everywhere else you get your audio on demand. The Game of Our Lives podcast with David Goldblatt. Subscribe now.
Tom, this might be the perfect place for you to talk about Indian football terminology. Your book, Do You Speak Football, which is out on the, remind me?
3rd of May.
3rd of May. Interesting. Described by Jonathan Norcross as quirky and addictive, endlessly readable by Barney Rone, and Ein Super Book by Raphael Honigstein, contains, I think I'm right in saying, some particularly good Indian football idioms.
It does. Would you like to hear some?
Yes.
Okay, we'll start off with one from Goa. This is an expression which describes a jumpy goalkeeper. It's Kulio Dorta, which, probably not pronouncing that correctly, translates as catching crabs. So you've got the image of someone dipping their fingers into a rock pool.
Oh.
Nervously trying to get their hands on a crustacean.
I like that.
Another one, the legendary Bengali filmmaker and writer Satyajit Ray created a character known as Faluda, who was this sort of cerebral detective, kind of Sherlock Holmes figure.
Mm.
And he was renowned for his ability to sort of think his way through extremely complex investigations. When he managed to pull off a successful investigation, he was said to have used his magogastro, which was his brain weapon.
Brain weapon.
And so if a Bengali football coach makes a particularly effective substitution, changes the game and wins the match for his side, he's said to have used his magogastro. He's used his brain weapon.
Damn. What is a striped snakehead, a.k.a. a paral mean?
A striped snakehead is a small freshwater fish found in the backwaters of Kerala, notoriously difficult to catch, and in the local football parlance, it's used as a metaphor for a slippery attacker.
Oh, nice. How about Petu Kidakunavan?
Yeah, this is quite an amusing one. This is another term that comes from Kerala. Its literal translation is lying down after labour.
Right. After giving birth. Right.
And it's used to describe a goal hanger, basically. Huh? So someone who never leaves the penalty area is held to be as mobile as someone who is
down
someone
after,
who
after
is specifically
birth.
Someone who is bedridden after giving birth.
That's extraordinary. Any others?
I've got one more. A jalebi, which is a sweet spiral-shaped pretzel made from deep-fried flour batter that's dunked in syrup.
Mm.
I've not eaten one of these, but I have looked at the pictures and they look very tasty. A jalebi is a player who holds onto the ball too much, constantly tying himself in knots because the food itself is a big sugary knot.
Right.
So if you're the kind of person who's constantly doing step overs and running down blind alleyways, then you are a jalebi.
It's funny to talk about Indian football, though, because in Denmark, Indiana football, which is Indian football, means a game that's end-to-end, where there's no team's got control over the game, it's just all over the place.
Really?
Indiana football, yeah.
Okay. Any Danish terminology you want to throw at us, Steve?
Peter Kjær, who was a goalkeeper I play with, he's like the Danish Gary Lineker. Does all the Premier League games over there. He used to have one. If a player had a bad touch, you'd say that he had a frog in his boot.
Nice.
Which kind of makes sense.
How does that sound in Danish?
Oh, don't ask me.
Okay. But that's extraordinarily colourful. I think that's probably the most colourful set of similes that we've had so far from you, Tom.
Yes, yeah, I'm quite a big fan of the small India section in the book.
Nice. Okay, well, let's move on then for our final little item in today's Totally Football Show to good old Italy. And with very good reason, listeners, because it's back on. Title race is back on. And what's more, they've gone and scored some goals again. You remember last weekend, 10 matches, only 11 goals, 5 nil-nils. Midweek, a very different story. Right, Mr. Horncastle?
Oh, yeah. And I think on average, Serie A is probably the goaliest league in the Europe's top five leagues.
Let's say it is.
Yeah, so yeah, last week, we'll give them that.
Yeah. Okay. Game of the night, Wednesday, was Lazio, who were 2-0 down away at Fiorentina. Lazio recalling that three-way battle with Inter and Roma, only 1 point between them for a top four spot. They were 2-0 down. Both their rivals taking 3 points. They came back and won it 4-3. Boom.
Yeah, no, extraordinary because they were in the lead three times in that game, Fiorentina. First time they've lost since the tragic death of Davide Astori. They've been on this incredible run since then, still in the hunt for a Europa League race. But some character from Simone Inzaghi's boys, because I think both Roma and Inter, who won in this match day, thought they were just about pulling away for the Champions League places. And that's the great thing about Serie A. Everything is still to play for. The title, Champions League, Europa League, relegation places. Mm. It's where it's at, Jimbo.
Right. Well, the big result, I guess, or the big pair of results, featured the relegation battle and the title race, which is back on. Napoli was 6 points behind Juventus coming into this round. We're taking on Udinese, a side who'd lost 9 matches in a row. Juventus, meanwhile, were taking on Crotone, who are down in the bottom three, and were winning. Napoli were losing 2-1 at home. Now, Crotone equalise with another bicycle kick. It's the curse of the overhead kick, the papers are dubbing it.
After Ronaldo's.
Yeah. So all of a sudden, Juve are drawing 1-1, and this incredible roar goes up, apparently, in Naples around the San Paolo, and Napoli kind of roll up their sleeves Torino style and bang on it and beat them. Was it 4-2?
Yeah, and it's the ninth time this season that Napoli have come back to win a game. I think they've recovered something like 28 points from losing positions, which, you know, for people who question their character, that's some resilience from this Napoli side that still believe and will be going to Turin on Sunday night for what Gazzetta is calling La Madre di tutte le partite, mother of all games.
Okay, do a translation. Yeah. okay, so 4 points between them. If they win in Turin, Napoli obviously will be 1 point behind, and Juve have a much tougher set of fixtures between here and the end of the season. They have to go away to Roma, they have to go away to Inter. Mai Rahman says, do you believe Napoli can beat Juve and open the title race up on Sunday? Do Napoli themselves believe it? What do you think, James?
Look, Napoli are unbeaten on the road in how long, James? 18 months.
Wow,
they haven't lost
months?
A game in the league away from home in 18 months. That is a remarkable record.
But they don't just have to not lose. They need to win.
Well, yeah, but also, as you mentioned, they have a much more favourable run-in than Juventus do, because Juve have to go to San Siro to play an Inter side that looked good at the moment, beat Cagliari 4-0 on Tuesday night. Roma are looking good, even though maybe their head's going to be in that Champions League semi-final. But Napoli, I think the only game really that you look at and think that's a potential banana skin is against Fiorentina, and that's it. So they seem to have really got a second wind. Sadi was talking last night about how well they played in the first 20 minutes last night and then the final 20 minutes. And also, yeah, they've already qualified for the Champions League with six games to spare. And he was trying to take the pressure off his players by basically saying, there are Champions League bonuses in our contract. There are no title winning bonuses. That's our objective, to get into the Champions League, which... You know, his mind games, I think, trying to get his players...
He's using his mind weapon.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's amazing. So, all right, Sunday night on BT Sport, of course, is where you can see Juventus-Napoli. What game that's set to be. David, since we're here and talking about Serie A, did you see Gigi Donnarumma's save on Milik? The save that effectively, I think a lot of people thought, had ended the title race. This was back on, when was it, Monday night?
Sunday night. It was on Sunday.
Sunday night. Yeah. Milan-Napoli.
Yeah, it was a fantastic save. I know we spoke about it on Twitter, me and James, and to me, he didn't guess. It's kind of just as a ball comes across, you know, it's something you don't think about, something you go back to, or your experiences that you've had before.
So to set this up, basically, lovely interplay between the Napoli forwards, and the ball comes to Milik. He's absolutely alone. I think he's even closer in than the penalty spot. Yeah, dead centre. Nobody, 7 yards out, nobody near him.
He has to score.
Basically
has to score, but because a ball comes across from the right onto his left foot, and you can see because his body's closed up and his foot's closed, it's only going to go one way.
Right.
If he tries, I don't know if he could take with his right foot actually, but if he tries to open his body out, then it gives Donnarumma more of a problem. But because it's closed up, he can see that straight away, and he obviously dives to his left, and it's a phenomenal save.
Absolutely brilliant save. He's that initial kind of promise we saw in him, he's on that trajectory still, is he?
Yeah, this season's it's been troublesome because he's had all the background stuff, you know, the problems he's had with the fans, and obviously he signed his new contract this year. Was it this season in the summer?
Last summer,
yeah. And there's still talk that's, you know, about his future. So that's going to please my. He's a young kid still, you know. So it'll be difficult for him to concentrate. But when I look at goalkeepers and I look at him, you know, there's a lot technically wrong with him, and it's not technically perfect, but it's not about being technically perfect, it's about being effective, and the size of him and the sheer reach helped him that save as well. Just gets him out of trouble a lot of times.
Do you think, David, by the way, that goalkeepers are peaking earlier these days when you look at some of the players, when you would expect a goalkeeper to be in their prime? It seems like nowadays it's almost the younger years that are the ones where they excel the most.
I think a big part of us now is the type of goalkeepers that we're developing. The goalkeeper, until now, goalkeepers have still sort of had that, you know, the kind of mentality of goalkeeper first and player second, where now we're seeing true sort of hybrid goalkeepers. I think that's got a big part to play in it. But also, I think there's a sort of psychological factor to it as well, where, you know, you see a lot of goalkeepers now and goalkeepers who come towards in the career that they're scarred and they haven't, you know, they've made mistakes and they've had dips and not really recovered fully from them. You see young goalkeepers now, the way they're being developed, there's a different mentality about them. You look at somebody like Jordan Pickford and Jack Butland, they've got this ultra confidence about them. It's what we've lacked, especially British goalkeepers. You know, you look at it's the way we've developed goalkeepers, where we've really hounded our goalkeepers when being coaching about making mistakes. We've really sort of emphasised them, where I think it's a totally different way of looking at it if you just move on for those mistakes and don't dwell on them as much. And you see now, when I see these young kids training, you know, they don't beat themselves up. All goalkeepers, they'd be, you know, be showing everyone how much they care and beating the floor and looking really disappointed, when that's not the way. You've got to stay focused and stay on a level emotionally.
All right, well, that's positive. Let's finish off with a quick word on Serie A jerseys, because last weekend, Udinese left many viewers perplexed when they sent 11 players out in 11 different jerseys. That, James, was for charity.
Yeah, they did. It was a great initiative. Basically, fans donated their own jerseys, and they then
like replicas from previous years.
Yeah, and they asked them to ask fans to pledge money for a cause that was close to their heart. So it might be that they are raising money for some kind of local initiative that they wanted to put on, or for a charity. Unfortunately, Udinese lost their ninth straight game. So,
did they get their jerseys back afterwards?
I think they did. Yes. Yeah. Sweats. Right. I hope they were cleaned.
Well, you'd hope so. Yeah. All right. So that was last weekend, and top work Udinese. It did look interesting, didn't it? Seeing the 11 iterations, or certainly 10 iterations.
Surely a good motivating tactic as well, because you know, if you're a player wearing one of those shirts, you want them to. You want to perform well enough to just to get people to pledge their money.
Right.
But
okay.
Yeah.
Well, we saw another interesting initiative, not for charity this time, from Inter midweek, when instead of players' names on the back of their jerseys, they put their Instagram handles. How did that go down?
Instagram.
Instagram.
Like. There you go.
Very nice. How what was the reaction to that?
Well, we're talking about it, aren't we?
We are.
Which is exactly what they probably want, Jimbo.
Yeah, I'm going to go and get on Instagram and look at Icardi.
Icardi, Icardi's Instagram is quite good, particularly when he's in the Maldives sunbathing with nothing but a bowler hat covering his private parts. That's
nice.
Good, yeah.
Are there any genuinely interesting footballer Instagram accounts that are really left
Balotelli
field?
Is good.
I mean, Balotelli's is good.
Yeah. Oh,
but that aren't just.
Well,
Asprilla, there you go.
And probably David Priest's.
Nah, not really, to be honest with you.
Okay. All right, then. Well, good Lord, I think we've probably come to the end of our football chat. So, how about we drop in on our chums, Producer Ben and Paddy Power, as they discuss the latest odds on all that football.
Thank you, Jimbo. I'm with Lee Price again. And Lee, let's talk about the FA Cup. Man U v Spurs is probably the bigger of the two games. But Man U, they had that terrible weekend against West Brom. Lots of media stories about Paul Pogba. What odds can I get on him not starting?
Whew, yeah, I just can't see it. I know Mourinho's been on his case this season, but actually, Jose appeared to defend Pogba very slightly after the West Brom fiasco. So, for the biggest game of the season, can he really drop the club's record signing? Well, actually, yes. It's exactly the kind of thing Mourinho would do. So, we offer 5-1, which is starting to sound like brilliant value to me.
And what about the result itself in the game? And please tell us about the money back special, Lee.
Yeah, we think this is going to be a really tight one, which, you know, isn't original to say looking at the draw. Tottenham, we favour at 11-10. United are 23-10, the same result as a draw after 90 minutes. If you do think Tottenham are going to win, we've got a money-back special as a free bet if Tottenham do win within the 90 minutes. That applies to losing first, last, anytime goal scorers, correct score, and what odds Paddy markets, max refund £10.
Okay, in the other semi-final, it is Chelsea against Southampton. And I'm thinking that the Saints have got revenge on their mind. Can they get a 3-2 here and do the reverse of last weekend's fixture?
Personally speaking, no, but we'll offer odds on this anyway. Southampton did win 3-2 fairly recently when beating West Brom in February. And if there's one team that's more demotivated than the Baggies right now, it's the one managed by Antonio Conte. We go a massive 60-1, though, that Saints win 3-2. I'm not buying it.
Back to the Premier League then. West Brom, they're taking on Liverpool. They're unbeaten since Darren Moore has taken charge. They got a bit of previous with Liverpool, beaten in the FA Cup, of course. So what about a double here of beating Liverpool and Daniel Sturridge? Remember him getting on the score sheet?
Yeah, I think Sturridge getting on the pitch would be enough for a challenge, let alone scoring. We go 4-1 that Sturridge scores at any time during the match, if he starts, of course, and 9-2 that West Brom win. So that amounts to a 48-1 double.
And last for this round of Movers and Shakers, Lee, City, they're taking on Swansea at the Etihad. They've already won the league. They'll probably win against the Swans here, but maybe Carvajal's people will take the lead.
Yeah, it's not as ridiculous as it might sound. Swansea obviously need the result and City obviously don't. Swansea are quite a chunky 4-1 to score first, but City are 13-2 to come from behind and win, inspired perhaps by the recent Manchester derby.
You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com. It's 18 plus only. BeGambleAware.org. And when the fun stops, stop. And that brings us to the end of Totally Football Show. Tom, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
David Priest, lovely to see you.
And you also.
And you, James Horncastle.
The pleasure was all mine.
Listeners, we will return on Monday. Enjoy the sunshine. Enjoy the football. Have a great weekend.
The Totally Football Show is a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, email sales@muddyneesmedia.com.
That was pretty good, wasn't it? Not nearly enough Football League, though. Why don't you give the Totally Football League Show a try? You'll find us on Audioboom, iTunes, all the other places you get your podcasts.